Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the Calcio Land podcast of the week. And this episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy League, the best place to play fantasy football / soccer. Also a great place to get tips and information on how you can win your league. So today we're going to get some reactions on what we saw in the World Cup over the weekend, recap the first month of the transfer window in Serie A, and get to your great Twitter questions. So I'm joined by our dear friend, co-host, producer, maker of fantastic videos on Twitter, Alex Goldberg. So I have to start with this, Alex. On Saturday, we had some amazing games in the World Cup. I have to ask you, how much do you think Argentina's exit in the round of 16 impacts Messi's legacy overall?
Yeah, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, David, which is what you talk about a lot. So I honestly don't think it will impact it that much. If we step away, say Messi retires and we step away 2-3 years and we view Messi's career, sure, we may mention if we're comparing Messi to some of the other greats, we may mention the fact that he didn't do great in the World Cup or he didn't win a World Cup. But overall, if you watch Messi week in, week out, or even don't watch Messi week in, week out, and just watch him in some important games, Messi is clearly a top three player of all time. I'm sorry, he absolutely is. And honestly, unless you're a Real Madrid fan, he's got to be one or two. He really does. And yes, when we compare, especially in basketball, David, when we compare LeBron and Jordan, most people, and now I'm a huge Jordan fan and not a big LeBron guy, but most even objective people will, maybe if it's close, they'll side with Jordan, right? Because he's got the 6 titles and LeBron has the 3 titles. So for me, achievements, team achievements are tiebreakers. Now, Messi has won a lot at club level. I mean, he's won the Champions League. He's won the league title. He's been to a World Cup final. It's not like this guy only has individual accomplishments. He has plenty of team accomplishments. Now, if Ronaldo had kept going on in the World Cup and, say, won the World Cup after winning the Euros, well, then yes, I think Ronaldo is greater than Messi because he has that tiebreaker of team achievements. But how much will it impact Messi's legacy? I mean, sure, winning the World Cup in reverse would impact it in a greater fashion. I'm just not sure whatever happened in this World Cup with Argentina really hurts it that much. It's so easy to be a prisoner of the moment and be like, oh, Messi's the greatest player in the world and Argentina has so much talent. Shame on Messi for not taking them there. Ah, that's just tough. That's just tough. I mean, Germany exited. Ronaldo just exited. The World Cup is its own entity. We've compared it to the NCAA tournament. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean the best players win that tournament. So overall, I don't think it's going to hurt it that much. But sure, doing better in it could have helped it that much. But overall, Messi's status as a top three player of all time will not be changed. That's my opinion, David. What about you?
So I have to say, my opinion on the whole GOAT debate has really evolved. When I was younger, I used to like to talk in terms of the best ever. Then as I got older, I started getting into just saying this is the best per player I've ever seen. But now my way of looking at it has evolved, and I just rank players within their own era. So to me, Messi is the best player of his era. I just find it very complicated to compare players from different eras. You mentioned LeBron and Jordan. I think that's a good example as well. The game's pretty different in the NBA. They face different competition. So I just really like to look at it in those terms. And, you know, I was thinking over the weekend, definitely the World Cup has been very exciting. A lot of the games have really been breathtaking. That France-Argentina game was really one for the ages. But, you know, compared to when I was growing up, and, you know, Diego Maradona was the superstar when I was growing up, the Champions League has really become much more important than, say, back in the 80s. Like, I really think the gold standard as far as performance and where the top players compete is certainly the Champions League now. When Maradona was playing in it, it wasn't even called the Champions League. It was La Coppa dei Campioni in Italy, the Champions Cup. And it was just a very different competition than now. And now, look, Maradona never really had a team to realistically win the tournament. So, again, that's another reason why it's very difficult to compare players from different eras. But the one thing that I will say that is important when we discuss Messi's legacy, I think it's all too easy that every time Messi wins a title with Barcelona, that we say, oh, he's winning despite his team. He carried his team to victory. If then we turn around that when he falls short, to just blame his teammates and say it's all their fault, the federation's fault, his teammates, or whatnot. So I think you have to have the same standard in both. But again, I think it's just very complicated to compare players from different eras. I definitely don't think this really hurts Messi's legacy too much. And I think you made a great point with Ronaldo being out at the same time. That certainly is going to save him some headaches down the road. But speaking on something on a much more brighter note in the work Cup. We had that amazing performance by Mbappe. And, you know, one saying that we have in the transfer market, and I think this is true most of the time, is that it's better to sell a player a year too soon rather than a year too late. But when I look at Mbappe, I'm like, oh my God, I can't even imagine how much his worth would be now after the World Cup. And look, I think last summer his transfer fee, when we count the loan fee, the option to buy, was around 180 million to 200 million. But you look at now, his performances in the World Cup, you consider that players like Dembele went for 150 million. I'm flabbergasted as what he would cost now. So, Alex, what's your thought on Mbappe? How impressed have you been with him?
Oh, he's unbelievable. I mean, I actually tweeted that you better value happiness over accomplishments, because if you value accomplishments, Mbappe has us all beat because he's only 19 and he's doing a brace as a teenager in the World Cup. I mean, that kid is unbelievable. The thing with Mbappe is, like, David, he has that it factor. I don't know what it is, but you just sense it. When he has the ball, he exudes confidence. He is so dynamic, and that's an overused word. I feel like anybody that can dribble and move fast and have some power to their style, they're called dynamic. But Mbappe truly is. He has such a confidence when he's on the ball. I mean, half the time he's not even necessarily used in his best position. I remember for Monaco, he would always come in on the left and people would compare him to Thierry Henry. He could kind of curl it in from the left side. France is using him as a right winger, which, I don't know, almost could be a hindrance to some players even with that much talent. But this kid is something special, and it's unbelievable that he's just a kid. So, you know, you talk about his value. It's like, all right, he had a really good year at PSG. He had 13 goals, 8 assists. He played really well. But, I mean, you're going to be second fiddle to Neymar, and it's ridiculous to think that Mbappe is second fiddle to anybody. So if he had been on Monaco last year, so he still never had made the move to PSG, had been on Monaco last year, he would have amounted more than 13 goals and 8 assists just because of sheer opportunities. And then the World Cup comes up. I totally believe he still would have had the same important role for France, even if he was on Monaco the previous season. The World Cup comes up and he scores a brace. I don't know. I mean, it would have been astronomical. This is the type of player that, I don't care what team you are, Bayern, Real, Barca, City, even City with every offensive player in the world, you put in as much money as you can possibly borrow, let alone have, to get a talent like this. Now, I got to think it would be somewhere in the 200s now if he had stayed on Monaco. So, I mean, this kid is through the roof. I got super jealous when a Chelsea fan actually posted Mbappe at like 10, 11 years old. I think he was at the Chelsea training ground and he pointed to a kit that had his name on it. I mean, this is the type of kid that any team buys, even if you have Ronaldo and Messi. So he's been such a joy to watch, and props to him, because I had given France a little flack for not necessarily being able to play their style. I was afraid that Deschamps was a little hesitant on fully embracing what France is all about. But Mbappe is what France is all about. So his value is going up every minute. That's my opinion. What about you, David?
Yeah, like, you know, I was thinking even just now as you were talking, and now that he's on PSG, look, we know they're not going to sell that kid no matter what. That once they have a player on the contract, especially this talent. But I was thinking, if he was available now, imagine what Real Madrid would be willing to pay for him. You know, maybe it would have a domino that maybe Cristiano Ronaldo would leave Real Madrid, maybe for PSG if he was available. So it's a very fascinating what if. By the way, I think Ronaldo is going to stay put at Real Madrid now. But Mbappe is really that type of talent that you would think Real Madrid would say, no matter what, we're getting him. He really is the closest thing to the Brazilian Ronaldo as I have seen. I just think, too, you know, it's not just his speed and all, it's how composed he is. I mean, on such a huge stage coming through, I mean, the mental toughness too he displays is something else. So definitely very impressive World Cup so far, and he's really stood out. So now let's shift. I know we've talked about in the past on the podcast that we've kind of wanted to take stock of Serie A as a whole and the transfer market, see if the league has improved or not based on the players that came in or are leaving. So I did a little bit of research over the weekend, and I wrote down the players that are joining Serie A from abroad, those that are leaving, and I also listed players that changed teams in Serie A but stayed in the league. So I think this is the most objective way to see if the Serie A has improved as a whole. So I'm going to read out the list. If I miss someone, please send it in with the CalcioLan hashtag. So as far as new players coming in, we had Inter bring in Argentinian prospect Lautaro Martinez. We had Juve sign Emre Can on what turned out to be not a free transfer, but still an impressive move. We had Roma bring back Javier Pastore to Serie A. We had them sign two exciting prospects in Kluivert and Koric. Monchi also signed Marcano, the defender from Porto. We had Bologna sign striker Santander. We had Fiorentina sign a fantastic keeper if you play FIFA in Lafon. And I think they should hire me to be their goalkeeper coach, because if I can do what I did on FIFA, he'll be the new Allison in no time. So impressive move by Fiorentina, took the medical today. We had Lazio make two other moves, which might turn out to be look like bargains down the road from abroad. They brought in Berisha and Dormisi for a combined fee of $15 million. Wouldn't shock me in typical Lazio fashion, and if in a few years they're worth a ton more. And then we have not official, but very likely Fabian Ruiz going to Napoli. And another significant figure that came back to Serie A is Carlo Ancelotti. Now, as far as the list of players that have left Serie A, it's pretty short. And look, I'll grant it that this list is definitely going to grow. There'll probably be some big name players, but so far, there haven't been that many losses. We have Watford today made the acquisition of left back Messina. Very good move. Impressive. He came from Bologna. We had Nani leaving Lazio. That didn't work out too well last season. We have Lichtsteiner leaving Juve to go to Arsenal. We have Rafinha, who left Inter. He might come back to Serie A, maybe Inter, maybe Lazio, or another team comes out of the blue, but I'm going to count him as leaving the league. And then I'm going to concede, although they're not official, Torreira, all but certainly going to Arsenal. Even his father recently stated that he will take the medical soon after the World Cup. And then we have Jorginho headed to Manchester City. And of course, Maurizio Sarri almost certainly going to Chelsea. At this point, I would say it's only a matter of time. So those are the departures. Compared to the players that are in, I think Serie A has definitely improved so far. I also like to point out the following players changed teams in Serie A, but they stayed in the league, and that's Nainggolan, De Vrij, and Asamoah, all at Inter. Impressive moves. We had Juve sign Perin, and we have Napoli signing Verdi from Bologna. So far, I'd say Serie A is off to a great start. So we'll keep track of this. We'll do it in another month as we get into the stretch run of the transfer window to evaluate if Serie A is getting better or not. So now let's get to the fantastic Twitter questions. As always, you can send us questions on transfers, Serie A, journalism, music, TV, films, using the CalcioLan hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today?
All right, David, let's start with a keeper and a club that I may be familiar with. What are the odds Allison joins Chelsea?
So let me start. So this morning I tweeted that Sarri to Chelsea almost feels like just a matter of time at this point. I also pointed out, and I got this from a very good source, that we can't expect Napoli to let any of their players join Sarri at Chelsea. Look, it's not an amicable divorce between Sarri and Napoli. If you know anything about Napoli's president, De Laurentiis, he likes to hold a grudge. One of the reasons, and there's many, but one of the reasons taking so long for Sarri to go to Chelsea is Napoli wanted to make sure that the players that have exit clauses on their team, that those clauses would expire. So most of the clauses for Napoli's key players, I would say pretty much all of them, expired at the end of June. So that's another reason. So you wouldn't be able to get them that way. And I doubt Napoli would negotiate sales. That being said, I'm seeing some Chelsea fans saying, you know, what's the point of signing Sarri if we can't get any Napoli players? You're really missing the point here. Sarri really is a great coach. If you were bored to tears and all the suffering that came with Conte in the last season, boy, you're in for a surprise with Sarri. It'll be very different. So let me get that off my chest. And Alisson, where I can't think of a keeper better designed to play for Sarri. The reason he wanted to keep Peperin at Napoli probably longer than he should was his ball distribution skills. And Alisson is as good a keeper as I've seen with his feet. Really fantastic at setting up the run of play. So he'd be a great fit for Chelsea. Now, for those of you that have been listening to the podcast, Alisson's been also linked to Real Madrid, but Roma's asking for a huge return, around 70 million euro, and it looks like Chelsea's more willing to meet that price than Real Madrid. So far, Alisson seems to be very eager to join Real Madrid, of course, because of the club that they are, and also because his wife is Spanish. But it's not like we have news that he doesn't want to join Chelsea, so let's see what happens. It also seems that there's a lot of momentum for Courtois going to Real Madrid now that he's not extending his contract. So if Chelsea can get Alisson, man, that would be a great way to get started with Sarri there. That's for sure.
Amen. That's one of the, honestly, Thibaut Courtois is immensely talented, but when you consider that Sarri would be coming to the bridge and Alisson fits Sarri, I don't really care if Thibaut edges him talent. That's a great acquisition if it happens. So, David, the next Twitter question is there any traction to the rumored Gonzalo Higuain for Alvaro Morata swap?
So first off, I really enjoyed having so many Chelsea fans bring to my attention Morata's Instagram post after I posted the news that, you know, his agent will meet with Chelsea and that he'd like to leave the club and that Chelsea's asking for a return of 65 to 70 million. Look, you know, the information came from a great source. I'll tell you, for whatever reason, it doesn't happen. It's not true. It certainly won't be because of a public statement that a player makes. I mean, people that have been following me for a while should know that the statements on transfers mean so little publicly. Like, just think of Pogba. He'd still be at Juve if we went by what players say publicly. Pogba literally told our friends from Italian Football TV he was staying at Juve a couple of days before he got on the plane for Manchester. Van Gaal would still be coaching Man United if we went by what he said publicly. Cuadrado would have never left Chelsea, and on and on and on. So in any event, public statements are what they are. Now, I do think there is some traction for Higuain and Morata swap because, as I mentioned, it doesn't look like Sarri will be able to bring any players from Napoli, but he could look for some of his former players that are now on other teams. And Higuain, him and Sarri have like a father-son relationship. Higuain was just incredible for Sarri at Napoli, and there have been reports, and these have dated back to over a month ago, that Higuain is potentially looking to leave Juve and would like an experience in the Premier League. If you know Juve, they're all about the player's will. If Higuain wants to leave, they won't stand in their way. Now, he has an amortized value left on Juve's books of around 60 million, so they'd have to get that back. And guess what? That seems to be a figure pretty close to what Chelsea is asking for Morata. So I could see there's a lot of things that make sense here. Also, Morata would love nothing more than to go back to Serie A, especially at Juve, where he had the best time of his career. So this could make a lot of sense. I definitely don't think it would be an even swap. It would probably be treated as separate deals, with Chelsea paying a transfer fee and Juve paying a transfer fee to make it work on the books. But no, it wouldn't shock me at all if this gains more traction very quickly.
Hey, if they want to dig Zappacosta, feel free as well. All right, David, next Twitter question. Let's stay on Juventus. What do you make of the old lady raising their season ticket prices, particularly in the Curva?
So this is a look, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on this, and maybe it's because, you know, I'm used to living in the U.S. where tickets for games, you know, can vary a lot. Season tickets for the Celtics and Patriots have gone on dramatically as the teams got better. I remember when the Celtics weren't very good, you could go to a game very cheap, and now the Celtics are really good. If you want to go to a good game, it's going to cost you a lot. So, you know, to me, it's always about supply and demand. But at the same time, I realized that in Italy and with football in general, with old school clubs, there is a tradition of fan bases and fans that go there. So I think that's also very important as well. But I do think that, you know, in a time that clubs are competing for huge revenues and the cost of doing business go up a lot, I think, you know, there has to be a happy medium between supply and demand and having a giving, you know, favorable treatment to fans that maybe have been there for a long time. And look at the thing. There's so many people from abroad that want to go to a Juve game in person. That's just the reality. It's a small stadium. Look, when Juve built the stadium, they weren't doing particularly well, nowhere near as well as now. They were coming off their old stadium. The Delle Alpi was like cavernous. It was so big and huge. They never came close to selling out. There's a reason why that stadium wasn't, the capacity isn't more. I think it's like 42,000. In a lot of ways, Juve is victim of their own success. More people want to go. They are charging more because, again, there's more people asking to go with a limited supply. So it's an interesting situation. I definitely don't think this has to do with Juve raising funds to buy a player. I think this is just a matter of supply and demand and Juve looking for more revenues to bridge the gap with the top. Juve is well above the other Serie A clubs. So when it comes to the top clubs in the Premier League and La Liga and even Bayern, they have work to do. And this is one area where they're doing it.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Let's stay on Juve. Are they going to turn all their spare players and prospects into Milinkovic-Savic?
So it's been a lot. I see a lot of Juve fans doing the math, adding up what they could get in Mandragora to Udinese for $20 million. It's all but official. They'll have a buyback clause. Then you add to that Rugani, who could make a lot of sense for Chelsea since he played for Sarri. There's Sturaro. We've seen some of their younger players that were out on loan, like Cherry and potentially even Piaka being used to raise funds. And I see a lot of Juve fans adding up all this to see how much that comes to meeting Milinkovic-Savic's asking price. And I admire all that, but I also think it's very important to note that Juve has spent a fortune this summer already, and they haven't sold anyone significant. I don't think it's a coincidence they did all these moves before raising ticket prices so they could tell their fans, hey, we brought all these players too. But if you look at Juve in recent years, I'm not a big fan of looking at net spend as a way to really gauge how much a club is spending, but it does give you a pretty good idea of you know, how much money the club puts in out of their own pocket in transfers. And Juve has been very balanced. I mean, they don't, you know, spend $100 million more than they sell, not even close. They are very balanced. So let's look in recent weeks, Juve, I think a lot of fans underestimate how costly it was to redeem Douglas Costa from Bayern Munich. Cancelo was $40 million. We had the $16 million fee on Emre Can for 2 years. Just those three players there, you're over $90 million. So Juve's got to recoup some of that money. Look, you know, what I like to say is that, you know, until the status quo changes, I go on the assumptions that things will stay the same. Until Juve starts spending a ton more than what they receive in transfers, I'm going to assume they're going to keep a balanced budget. So maybe they'll buy more, but I wouldn't be surprised if the players they sold now is really to recoup all the money they spent so far.
All right, David, next question. How can Juve keep selling their youngsters and mediocre players for huge prices?
So to answer this, I'd like to point out that a lot of transactions that you see on the transfer market may not necessarily be to improve a squad. In a lot of ways, they are moves made to improve a club's financial bottom line. This is very common for the big clubs in Italy. This isn't unique just to Juve, which there's no doubt. Look, they buy a lot of young players to make these types of moves. They see him as transfer assets. We also saw Galliani while he was at Milan make a ton of deals with Genoa that looked a little odd, taken in a vacuum. But you have to, when clubs make multiple deals with another club, you have to kind of look at them as a whole, not one individually. We have Inter, who for 2 years in a row have met their financial fair play by selling a lot of youth team players that have no Serie A experience for big fees. So this, it's not even if it's unfortunately, but this is how the financial side of deals happen. So when you look at things, you know, don't look at transactions just on its own. If you see multiple clubs make many deals, maybe look at them as a whole, and that'll give you a better understanding of why they're doing them in the first place.
All right, David, next question. Is there any truth to the rumors of Dries Mertens to Roma?
So Mertens is one of those players on Napoli that I mentioned whose exit clause expired. His expired last week, so before the end of June, but it was right at the end of the month. So it would be very difficult for Roma to sign him. I think that fee was valid only abroad anyway, but there's even less leverage now that the fee expired. Now, I will say, let's see if Ancelotti values Dries Mertens as much as Sarri did. It sounds like maybe he wants more of a classic number nine. I could see Milik getting more time. There's been rumors of Benzema, but that seems pretty far-fetched to me. So at this time, I see it a little bit far-fetched for Roma to sign Mertens. To my gut, based on how much Mertens loved the city of Naples, that if he were to leave, it would be to go abroad.
All right, staying on Roma. Roma have signed 10 players already and are linked to Hakim Ziyech and Herrera. Why are they pursuing so many players?
So for one, Roma's in a much better financial situation than they've been in years. This was the first time they didn't have to sell that they still have the financial fair play parameters. That run in the Champions League really paid off. Also, not to be underestimated, that transaction to send Emerson Palmieri to Chelsea in January for $30 million. So they've been in a much better financial position. It seemed that Monchi, too, is trying to target a lot more younger players. Players with upside where he could maybe sell them for more down the road. As far as Herrera, I can say that this move is really more with an eye towards 2019 when his contract expires. If they can bring him in on a lower fee before then, great. But I think they're really more planting the seed for 2019.
All right. Next question, David. It feels like Mateo Kovacic is better than Milinkovic-Savic. What do you think?
So this was tweeted to me right in the middle of the Croatia game. And you mentioned earlier we should try not to be prisoners of the moment. And look, you know, everyone knows I really like Milinkovic-Savic. I certainly expected more at the World Cup from him. I don't think it was as disastrous as people made it out to be. I thought in the first match he was quite good, not so much the others. And also it's important to note that Kovacic has a lot more experience playing with the Croatian national team than Milinkovic-Savic does with Serbia. I think he barely played with those other players, but enough excuses on it. I've always been a big Kovacic fan. I think he's very talented. If you watch him, he just passes the eye test. You know that guy is a baller, but not that consistent, at least at Inter. I think when you look at their track record in Serie A, I thought Kovacic was quite good in Serie A, but Milinkovic-Savic definitely better. I don't think Kovacic was ever in the conversation for best player of the season in Serie A, while Milinkovic-Savic was. So I'm a big Kovacic guy, but I think this sounds like a prisoner of the moment take to me.
Yeah, which is also known as a World Cup take, because if you look at their club seasons, Kovacic, sure, he's on Real Madrid, but he can't get in as a starter on Real Madrid, and Milinkovic-Savic was one of the top players in Serie A. So this is what I caution people. The World Cup, it's really hard to make full-blown conclusions on World Cup performances, good or bad. So let's move on, David. What's the latest on Bonucci and Manchester United?
So we got asked about this on for Friday's episode, and in the meantime, some things haven't changed, but there's been some updates. Today, Milan's executive director, Fassone, finally clarified a bit the ownership situation. Definitely some pretty puzzling statements. I want to digest that and talk about it on an upcoming episode. But one thing he said is that they are definitely committed to keeping Bonucci. Now, again, I go back to what I said about Morata. Public statements don't mean that much to me. We did point out on Friday's episode, though, that because Milan paid so much for Bonucci just last summer, it's hard to turn a big profit on him because they haven't amortized that much of his transfer fee. But the advantage of moving Bonucci from Milan is saving a ton on wages. Now, Manchester United could certainly afford him, but I think the other factor is PSG could make a strong push for Bonucci. Buffon's going to be announced any day. Although he left Juve, Buffon and Bonucci still have a very good relationship. That would be attractive. We know that Bonucci, for family reasons, wanted to stay in Italy. And look, you know, Manchester isn't that much further than Paris. You know, Paris, there's a long tradition of Italian players and Serie A players being there. So if Bonucci is sold at the moment, if I had to say, does it make more sense, PSG or Manchester United, I would probably say PSG. But let's see what happens. I think it would a lot have to do with if Bonucci is ready to move his family or not, too.
Oh, I got to tell you, if Bonucci and Gigi Buffon went to PSG, wow, that is exactly what PSG needs. Leadership, experience, heart, they have it all. So that would be a great move for PSG. But I won't get too far ahead of myself, David. Let's move on to the next Twitter question. How can Milan be linked to an expensive player like Ciro Immobile, considering their complicated and unsettled ownership situation?
So I'll give you a little bit inside baseball thing here. You know, I think sometimes transfer rumors are leaked to the media to try to kind of change the storyline and bring hope. It's no coincidence that these Immobile rumors, which we've been talking on Di Marzio's site since late May, it's not a surprise that Milan is interested in him, but you know that there's almost an agreement in place between Immobile and Milan for him to join was leaked right around the time of the club's struggle with the ownership situation really hitting a new low. So it's this kind of a strategic leak, but it's also true. I mean, there's definitely been some talk between Immobile and Milan. Now, why would Immobile want to go to Milan? Lazio's probably better right now. Milan pays much higher wages. I think Immobile gets paid around $2 million net of taxes at Lazio. At Milan, he could earn double that. Although when Milan's had financial troubles, they still pay their players a lot. Now, the big issue, though, is getting Lazio to agree to this move. They signed Immobile to an extension just last year. They lost De Vrij, probably sell Milinkovic-Savic. Immobile has been great for them. I think they'd have to be really overwhelmed for that. So again, the news was on Milan reaching an agreement with Immobile. There's definitely some truth to that, but you have to look at the bigger picture. The odds of him joining Milan are pretty low at the moment, especially with the ownership situation. The other thing, though, that I have to laugh is some Milan fans are like acting as if Immobile is beneath Milan right now. Man, that guy said he has an absolute guarantee for goals. I think Milan would have been much better last season with Immobile instead of Andre Silva and Kalinic. So if Immobile does somehow get to Milan, that would be an absolute great move for them. So I really wouldn't look down on it, but I still think it's a pretty long shot at this point.
All right, fair enough. Next question. David, what happened to the Fabian Ruiz to Napoli deal? Is it still on?
Yeah, it is. Interestingly, today, Napoli released the players selected for their summer retreat, and Jorginho wasn't on it, which is a clear sign that the move to Manchester City is imminent. Once that gets done, Napoli will then pay the exit clause to bring Fabian Ruiz to Napoli. That deal's all but done. I think it's just more about timing. He'll probably take the medical, I would say, by Monday of next week, maybe sooner, assuming there's no bigger delays on your Jorginho deal.
All right, David, how about this? What's happening with Belotti? Did the injuries from last season cause him to miss a transfer to a big club?
Yeah, it's possible. I think at this point, he will stay at Torino. He has to reestablish his value. Definitely took a big hit. I thought his season wasn't as bad as people made it out to be, but he definitely missed a lot of time to injuries. Now, I will tell you, since we have a partnership with our friends at Euro Fantasy Game, I'm going to be playing fantasy football in Serie A next season, and Belotti would definitely be one of the players that I target because I think in Serie A he could do really well. Assuming he stays at Torino, and that looks to be the case, they'll build a team around him. So we look forward to competing with our listeners in fantasy football, with our friends with Euro Fantasy Game, and Belotti is definitely a player to watch in that regard.
I like that. Looking from the fantasy mind, because you look at players like Higuain and Ciro Immobile and Edin Dzeko and Icardi, they'll all probably have a higher price in fantasy than Belotti.
Yeah.
But as you said, Belotti will bang in goals. He will. So, David, here's our last Twitter question. This is an interesting one. Normally we talk about players, but how about this? Who are some of Serie A's most promising young managers?
Yeah, so we like getting questions like these on managers as well. So I think the two obvious ones, these are young managers that have done very well last season that really established themselves as probably the next great Italian managers, and they're both in the city of Rome. Simone Inzaghi at Lazio, very impressive. You know, his team score a lot of goals, but still has a pragmatic approach. In that sense, he kind of reminds me about Allegri quite a bit. Juve scored a ton of goals last season. They may not have been the most exciting, but there was definitely a pragmatic sign to them, and Inzaghi has that as well. I think Di Francesco at Roma, especially in the run in the Champions League, handled that very well. You look at how he handled the squad rotation, the pressure of being in Rome, the pressure of losing Salah the first season without Totti. I thought he really exceeded expectations. Let's see how he does without Nainggolan, but definitely one to watch. A manager some of our listeners may not be that familiar with is Sampdoria manager Gianpaolo. He replaced Sarri at Empoli when Sarri went to Napoli. They are very similar. Gianpaolo, very intriguing manager if you like the way Sarri plays. He has a similar style. Another manager that has a connection to Sarri is Gasperini at Atalanta. He's a little bit older, but he's Sarri's nemesis, really knows how to stop him, great at developing young players. But the young manager, and I've mentioned him a few times, who I'd really be on the lookout for is Di Zerbi, who Sassuolo hired. I thought he was excellent at Benevento, took him over mid-season when it was obvious they'd be relegated, and that team played really well. So I think he could be the new Di Francesco. So I want to thank all our listeners for sending us questions with the CalcioLand hashtag. We have a few that were sent right before the show that we'll answer later this week. If you're listening to us on your iPhone, please leave us a rating. Literally takes 5 seconds to give us a 5-star rating. You want to leave a comment, we read them all. Also, really important that you subscribe to the podcast. We give you the timestamps to make it easy for you to find what we like, but it really helps support the podcast if you subscribe and just download the episodes. And I also want to bring to your attention, Wednesday is 4th of July here in the U.S., a holiday for Alex and I, but we already recorded a Saturday special, which will run later in the week. So thank you so much for your support.